Welcome to the Beyond Jiu-Jitsu podcast. This is episode number 158. I'm Kieran Lefebvre, your co-host, joined by Adam Childs.
Hello, Kieran. Hello. I recently had a student say to me, he was like, "Oh man, I saw you on this podcast, whatever." He's like, "But I thought you were just a guest on the podcast." He's like, "It's actually your podcast." And I was like, "Yeah, I do it with Kieran." You know, he's like, I think it took multiple episodes till he was like, "Hang on a second."
Funny. Tell you what I get. There's a guy at the gym, and fuck, my wife does this to me more consistently. But there's a guy at the gym here in Sweden that whenever he wants to roll with me, he goes, "Do you train jiu-jitsu?" And then like points at me.
Because that's your intro
verticals
on your videos. Yeah.
I think the intro is pretty cringe, but initially it helped to get traction. But now that my content is embedded well within the jiu-jitsu algorithm sphere, I don't need to do it anymore. But it's like, yeah, it's super cringe. And my wife does it to me all the time. She goes up to me and goes, "Do you have elbow pain from jiu-jitsu?" So I'm smacking an elbow like I do in the videos. "Do you know what your elbow is?" And then, oh man, she takes the piss out of my content more than any fucking troll of mine ever could.
It's good.
It's very hurtful. Very hurtful.
Let me segue that to a little bit of funny information that the listeners wouldn't know. I think Kieran's wife low-key hates him because so she's trolling your content. Care to tell people what she's done to your caffeine intake as well?
Bro, she's been poisoning me. Like straight up been poisoning my coffee. So this happened like I think 3 weeks ago now. She, unbeknownst to me, she started slowly replacing out my coffee in the morning because we use a drip fed coffee machine with decaf and hasn't been telling me, did one scoop at a time. So the machine that we do, you know, normally it's like six small scoops and it creates the coffee in the morning. So she started with one scoop and then, you know, the next day it was two scoops of decaf to, you know, 2-4 ratio. And then all of a sudden by the end of that 3 week period, it became like all decaf and one scoop of regular caffeine. And I remember sitting in the morning, I'm like, "Oh man, I've been really good with like coffee lately. I haven't been getting caffeine headaches, this and that. I've, you know, blah blah blah." And then she like just bursts out laughing, and then she cannot keep a secret. Told me that she'd been slowly but surely replacing it out with fucking decaf. I couldn't believe it, and I didn't know why she was just making the coffee every single morning and like setting it up the night before and triggering it for the morning. I'm like, "This is great. This is a great routine. I get up, get my coffee, blah blah blah." It's fucking decaf, bro. It's bullshit.
Now you can't trust her to make you coffee anymore.
No.
The trust is gone.
I saw this like a documentary where this wife of was poisoning the guy's coffee with bleach of a morning. This is what I feel.
I think I saw that. Yeah,
this is how I feel. That's definitely like I'm that man.
It's definitely just as bad.
I'd say worse. I think bleach would be a sweet relief from the decaf. Anyway.
Yeah, she's a savage. Anyway, guys, we're talking about today the importance of asking why. However, before we get started with that, we're going to go over some of the messages we got from our last episode, where for anyone who made it to the end, we kind of asked, what's the heaviest person you've trained with, rolled with, competed against, and do you have any weird food combinations or things that you think might be odd, but you still enjoy it, A, maybe because it's just weird, or B, because it is nostalgic from your childhood. So for a reminder, I had mentioned that I rolled with this guy who was like 330 pounds, which is, 150 kilos. And I was mentioning how Shaquille O'Neal was saying in his prime, he was like 415 pounds, which I think is like 185 kilos.
188.24.
Yeah. And then I had mentioned that a weird thing that I used to eat and could still eat if I wanted to is like a grilled cheese and tomato sandwich, but I never liked tomato as a kid, so I would just put tomato sauce, which we learned, you know, Kieran's got a thing against tomato sauce. Don't know what he puts on his meat pies. Very un-Australian of you, Kieran. Anyway,
I don't put any sauce on my meat pies. It's got sauce in it, bro. Like, it is a fucking meat pie. It's still gravy.
It's self-sourcing.
Yeah, bro. It has sauce. The whole dish is sauce. Like, fuck me.
So we got some messages. We got one from Jacob who said he hasn't trained with anyone massive. 260 pounds is the biggest person he's rolled with.
That's about 120, just shy of 120 kilos.
I mean, it's still a heavy dude.
118 kilos.
Yeah. And said when he was a kid, and this food thing, I was shocked that he thought this was weird because I still do this. I know it'll be weird and gross for you, Kieran, but he was like, when I was a kid, I used to put tomato sauce or ketchup on my scrambled eggs. And I'm like, yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
People do that.
It's like disgusting. You order a big breakfast at a cafe here in Australia and it can come with tomato sauce. It's not
Bro, if weird I at ordered all. A big breakfast and it came with tomato sauce, I would fucking walk out. I'd be so offended.
But what if it also came with a decaf coffee?
Oh, that's throwing hands. We're throwing hands, bro.
And then he mentioned, and then he sent a little reel saying, oh, you're talking about Swedish pizzas. Wondering if you've ever tried Brazilian pizzas. I replied to Jacob, so he knows the answer. But I said, yeah, I'm not sure about Kieran. I lived in Brazil for 5 years, so I've eaten plenty of Brazilian pizzas. Do I rate it as a whole? And I'm no pizza expert, right? I've never even had true Italian pizza. I've never been to Europe, right? Like I've never had Chicago deep dish. I've never had Chicago deep dish. I've never had a New York slice, right? So I'm not a pizza expert.
New York slice is not that great, in my opinion.
Yeah, it doesn't look great.
Nah, I think I just offended a lot of people. I don't know. Maybe the one I had was shit.
Brazilian pizza, I don't particularly rate it. It's not like if all of a sudden I was at a party or someone's house and they ordered delivery and Brazilian pizza rocked up, like, would I eat it? Yeah, it's not like I'm going to go, that's gross. But it's just the toppings aren't my jam. Tends to be an absurd amount of cheese. In saying that,
sounds great.
Yeah, I know that does sound great, but it sometimes feels like you're literally just eating a block of cheese.
Okay, if you go to Italy and you order the quattro formaggi, the four cheeses. Oh my god, it's so fucking good, dude. Like, I'm not even a big cheese pizza guy, but the Italians, they have. Yeah, okay, it's cliche, but I don't give a fuck. They have the best pizza in the world. The best pizza I've ever had is in Italy. By far, like, it's so fucking good, man. It's so good. I had it.
I could guess that. But yeah, I've had some, like, I've been to some fancy restaurants in Brazil and like the pizza was really good. My brother-in-law in Brazil, he makes really good pizza. But as a whole, your generic takeaway pizza in Brazil, I don't really care for.
Fair enough. All right.
So, okay. But yeah, anyway, thanks, Jacob. Thank you.
I have another message here. I'm just going to read it out. Bro, I freaking love Catan. That's the opening line. Fuck yeah.
Which is the board game we're talking about. Yeah.
Heaviest person I've trained with is 300 pounds, a former powerlifter who's now a blue belt and a huge pain in the butt. So 300 pounds is 136 kilograms. That's heavy. Big boy. Here's the weird food thing. Get a McChicken from McDonald's. Take off the lettuce and mayo and add... Now, hear me out. Grape jelly. Sounds gross, but super delicious. Fuck that, dude. That you can keep that. That's disgusting.
That is the grossest thing. But like, I've got
That's the worst one so far.
I've got two main questions that story doesn't check out for me. I'm like, A, why didn't you just order it without lettuce and mayonnaise? Like, why be going? And then B, like, do McDonald's serve grape jelly? Did you take your own grape jelly to McDonald's? Like, how do these two things come together?
I have no idea, my guy. But that's one of them things.
But yeah, I'm not on board with that. I don't eat McDonald's, but I don't think they're that weird. I think it's pretty common that some people will get the fries and put them on their burger. At McDonald's, my dad always used to do that. Yeah, I've seen other people do it.
That's not gross. That's not like disgusting. That's not
just
like
being efficient, just putting it all together. And you see people dip their French fries into the ice cream.
I've done that. It's okay. It's not great. Like, you it's, know,
yeah,
you
just I would never buy, fries. I would never buy the two things specifically for that purpose, but
no, it's not great.
It's fine.
I think it's one of them things that, you know, kids do and they think they're cool and whatever. Yeah. Okay. So I've got another one from a YouTube comment. Weird food combo that I know deep down is gross, but also delicious. Mayonnaise on green beans. Don't knock it till you try it. Now, look, that one does sound a bit weird, but I can see a world where it's not completely disgusting. Now, I'm not the biggest mayonnaise guy, but, you know, I like green beans.
Yeah, I used to, when I was a kid, teenager, when my parents would make like a chicken parmigiana schnitzel thing, like I would have a little bit of thing of mayonnaise on the side as a little sauce, if you will, to have with it. So, but yeah, I'm not a huge mayo person. I mean, I'm not going to go ahead and try it, but it's not as weird as grape jelly on a McChicken. That's for sure.
Winning. That's winning for sure. I can't even believe that someone actually does that. Okay, another YouTube comment is, biggest guy I've rolled with is well over 250 pounds, but obviously they never asked them because they're a bit overweight. And over 250 pounds, so that's greater than 113 kilos. Pretty big. And then another comment says that they were 130 kilos. Sorry, the largest training part is 130 kilos and 20 years younger. So 130 kilos and young. So 130 is 286 pounds. Closer to 287. And last comment on YouTube is from Alex, who says, we have six guys at our gym over 120 kilos, which that is 120, 265 pounds. So we have six guys at our gym, well over 120 kilos, and we call ourselves the Goon Squad and try to train together wherever possible so we're not surprised at comps. A lot of them have rugby backgrounds, so they're a nightmare to take down. And we have some pretty we have some pretty good big boy guards. Yeah.
Man. Nice. Too heavy. But how did they get to that weight? Eating McChickens with grape jelly.
Bulk of season.
Fuck that noise.
Man. My mate and I used to train together, right? And he was a bit saucy at the time, if you know what I mean. And we would do a huge fucking training session, like 2 hours of just super high volume at the gym, just lifting. And then immediately after it, he'd be like, all right, let's go get Macca's or Hungry Jack's or whatever we'd get. And he'd go and just smash double McDoubles or whatever the fuck they're called, like two of them or three of them, and just eat like 3,000 calories worth of fucking McDonald's immediately after a workout. But he got big.
have you ever tracked what's the most calories you've ever eaten in one sitting?
In one sitting, I don't think I've ever tracked it, because it would probably be at like an event, like a wedding or something like that, you know, something along those lines. But I ate a lot, 5,000 calories in one
sitting. You ate a lot at Cooper's wedding when we went to Cooper's wedding.
Yeah,
which is one of my students.
4,000 calories.
Which meant, when you think, like, it's actually not that difficult to do, is it really? Like, I mean, if I was to challenge you to eat 3,000 calories of broccoli, that would be very difficult.
Yeah, that'd be gross. But I mean, I'd probably shit out of fucking Ivan.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of food, but I mean, sometimes it's like Kieran and I were just talking a little bit about this sort of thing before we started recording. Like, sometimes you don't realize, like, you could have a little, what are they called? Like a appetizer or like little canapes, sorry, not appetizer, canapes or whatever, depending on what it is. It could be a one bite mouthful thing that could be 300 calories, you know, or whatever. And then you easily can eat like, you know, like 10 of them. Yeah. Right. And there you go. There's your 3,000 calories. And like, you're not full at all. And then you go, then you get some drinks, and then, you know, then actually the main courses come or whatever. And then,
Yeah, that's why those 10,000 calorie challenges are super popular on YouTube. But I've never done one. I've been wanting to do one, but I just can't justify it. You know what I mean? Like, why? They're not super difficult. Like, for a guy, you know, your size and my size, it would not be difficult to eat 10,000 calories in a day if you were strategic about it. If you actually wanted to get down 10,000 calories, it would not be hard. It would be the biggest thing that gets these guys that try these 10,000 calorie challenge is the palate fatigue, because they choose foods that are, you know, their favorite foods. They go like super savory and then super sweet and then super savory. Like they just, you get what's called palate fatigue. Where have you ever been eating like, say, something sweet or something salty, and then you're like, fuck, I just need the opposite. I need something sweet now. And that's because, you know, your brain gets overstimulated with that one taste, and it's called palate fatigue. It's a real thing. And it can also happen when you're eating the same food every single day, unless you're like, you know, if you're neurotypical, if you're neurodiverse, then, you know, whatever.
But, well, bro, you could go get if you ordered the correct Starbucks Frappuccino, it could be 1500 calories, in that bad boy, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, I could easily have 10,000 calories a day just of liquids, cram a whole bunch of fucking, you know, nut butter into a full fat, you know, huge fucking protein shake or whatever, put sugar in it or whatever, like oil. And yeah, you could smash that easy.
Anyway, let's get into it. So yeah, well, I wanted to talk today about, the importance of asking why. Before we go any further, I don't mean being the dude at the gym. It's like, but why? But what if they do this? That's not what I'm talking about. Don't be that dude.
The white belt why?
Yeah, the white belt why. Not that.
No offense.
I'm just wanting to talk about actually understanding why you're doing something or choosing to do something. I think is a really important question to ask, because if you have the answer to that question, I think doing the activity or working towards that goal or whatever becomes much more sustainable and much easier to get on board with. In saying that, sometimes the answer to why is just, well, just because, like, just because, you know, like, but you know, like, why do you play video games, or why do you go running? Why do you do this? Okay. And I got onto this train of thought because of one of the whys that I'm going to mention shortly. But before that, I thought we'd start with something more fundamental, which has probably come up in general conversation in episodes before, but it would have been a long time ago. So the why, the real why you started jiu-jitsu, the real why I started jiu-jitsu. Okay. So let's start with you, bro. What is the, if you really think about it analytically, why did you start jiu-jitsu?
Okay. There's a lot of whys here. I've told this a million times, so I'm just going to quickly rehash. I did a trial class at Gracie Baja something like 3 years before I actually started training jiu-jitsu at Vantage with you, Adam. And the reason that I initially was interested in that first, like my first why as to why I wanted to start training jiu-jitsu, is I was a very, pretty jacked dude. I was a bodybuilder. I was, you know, dabbled in powerlifting. I was fit and strong, and I thought I was king shit, right? I was young and stupid and whatever. I was going out all the time. And I thought I had that typical mentality of, oh, bro, if I just see red, bodies hit the floor. You know what I mean? I'm not even kidding. Like, I'm like, oh, yeah, I've got like fucking 10 kilos of muscle on that guy. I smash him, right? Just, you know, that fucking Bradley Martin mentality.
I was about to say you're Bradley Martin before Bradley Martin.
But I was like, you know, a skinny fucking pin dick version of Bradley Martin. But that was – and I was very self-aware of that when I started, you know, fucking about with mess rumbles in the Navy with a guy called Dwayne, who's a good friend of mine and an ex-professional Muay Thai fighter and like the equivalent of maybe, just shy of a blue belt, right, in jiu-jitsu. And he fucking smashed me, right, without even trying, and with the same size. And that made me realize, hang on a minute, there's a whole nother world here. And I all of a sudden had that feeling of feeling really secure when I walk around thinking I'm king shit to feeling like I'm in danger of just walking around the street. Like I'm going to the extremes here, but you know, I had that mentality all of a sudden that now when I'm walking around, I knew that I couldn't fight. I knew I couldn't defend myself. And that like scared me a bit. You know what I mean? In a weird sort of way. So it wasn't like self-defense, but sort of. And so that's why I initially did the trial class, but like I said before, the Gracie Baja just didn't vibe with me. I thought it was kind of gay, and so I never actually signed up. But I was very interested. I just never took the plunge. And then the reason that I walked into your gym was a little bit different. It was all of those reasons that why that I just described never went away. It was still there. But I reached a point where I was getting a bit fatigued of the what I was doing in bodybuilding. I wasn't going to compete in bodybuilding anymore. I wasn't really interested in competing in powerlifting. So I wanted to do a sport. I wanted to funnel my expertise in fitness and nutrition into a sport. I wanted to get good at a sport. So I actually looked into CrossFit. I was like, well, should I start competing in CrossFit? Just randomly do CrossFit. So I tried it out a bit. I was doing my own CrossFit workouts for like 6 months. I got pretty decent just by myself without even going to a fucking CrossFit gym, just doing the basic, what do they call them? The girl name workouts, WODs. Right? Yeah, WODs. Yeah, but the beginner series of CrossFitters will know what I'm talking about. So I did like Cindy and all the girl names and some of the hero workouts. Anyway, so I did a bunch of those and I got pretty fucking good at them. You know, whether my form was perfect is questionable. But, you know, and I looked at that and I was like, well, I don't really want to do CrossFit because it's kind of gay. So what's less gay than CrossFit? And then my mate, Zach, was listening to Joe Rogan. And he was like, bro, Joe Rogan was constantly sending me podcast episodes of Joe Rogan. So, you know, I was like, okay, I start listening to Joe Rogan. He's like, check this one out. And he's like, bro, I'm going to start training jiu-jitsu. And then basically regurgitating and parroting all the benefits of jiu-jitsu that Joe Rogan talks about to me. And he's like, bro, I've signed up to a trial class. I'm like, fuck. All right. Well, I've got a jiu-jitsu gym literally walking distance from my house. It was your gym. And I run past it all the time. I see him running in circles and, you know, doing weird shit. I was one of the creepers that stood on the window with, like, breathing on the glass. Like, what's going on? You know, but I would like look in and see what's going on and yada, yada. And my mate was like, yeah, I got a trial class next week. So I'm like, fuck you. I got a trial class tomorrow. So I beat him to it by like a few days. And then, man, I was just straight up fucking hooked. And yeah, right. I don't know. That's a long ass story, but there's a lot of whys. I had a lot of whys. So it fit in really nicely with everything that I wanted to do at the time.
Mine's not too dissimilar-ish. But I think my why would go back a little bit further to answer the question of like why I started martial arts, I guess.
Yeah.
And it was for a similar reason. Not that I never had this Bradley Martin complex. Like, I was always like, I didn't receive too much bullying in high school, but my older brother was bullied really bad. So I kind of was bullied by default or treated poorly by default because I was his brother. And yeah, I just never had, I don't know the reason without going down a rabbit hole of speaking to a professional in mental health. Like, I don't know if it was to do with lack of self-confidence or lack of feeling like I should be able to defend myself or whatever, but it was, or, you know, I would get any sort of potential altercation. I would get super anxious. It was almost like the fight or flight, but it was 99% flight. Even if it was just someone beeping their horn in road rage, oh, what if they stop the car and get out and start yelling at me? You know, it was just this,
yeah,
like not like uncontrollable panic attack level fear of a physical altercation, but there was definitely a fear of any sort of physical altercation. Mm. That's why I started martial arts. But then to quickly fast forward how I got from there to jiu-jitsu, I did a martial art, you know, realized, hang on, this is kind of fake bullshit. Went to Muay Thai and I was like, oh, this is real. And then I was like, a little too real. I don't like getting punched and kicked in the head. And then went from there to jiu-jitsu. And that's the why that I started. And
yeah,
if I talk about it in more depth, like, it definitely changes the way that I just carry myself and my posture. Like, I'll give you, I've mentioned this once before, but a very simple example is, you know, a couple of years ago I'm not someone who gets in fights or has been in fights. I think I've been in one street fight and it was like 15 dudes against me, my brother and my wife. It was just, we got like cornered and beat on. But yeah, a few years ago, I was walking on a footpath and it was a little bit narrow, and I'm walking next to shoulder to shoulder with a stranger and walking along, and then the footpath widens up and a cyclist goes round us. And as he rides past us, like, I look up and see him look over his shoulder with this, you know, like, oh, look on his face. Like, we were hogging the whole footpath as he rode off. And then I, you know, shouted something like, you know, well, ride on the road, which in Australia, you're actually supposed to ride bicycles on the road in bike lanes. Yeah, it's
illegal to ride them on the footpath.
Yeah. And then he like skidded to a stop, but he's like kind of, I don't know, like 10 meters in front of me. And he like skids to a stop and says something like, I'm allowed to ride on the footpath or something like that. I can't remember. Pre-jiu-jitsu Adam would have like avoided that situation like the plague, like thinking that something's going to go down. Whereas, like, it's not like I was looking for a fight, but I just like kept, I don't want to say walking towards him. He stopped in front of the direction I was walking. Like, I just didn't break stride. You know, I can't remember what I said. I think I said something like, what are you going to do? And then he just like kept riding off. That's a silly example, but it's very like night and day compared to how massively I would have avoided that situation previously. Whereas now, just, you know, the posture and confidence in, like, there's no way that was ever going to divulge into a physical altercation. But you see what I mean, how even a verbal altercation, I instantly went down a potential, yeah. I drew a connection from that slight elevation in someone's voice or tone. Whereas now, that doesn't happen. We don't even have to be talking about the physical altercation. We can just be talking about a verbal disagreement used to make me anxious. Whereas now, because my confidence in being able to look after myself, in saying that, I'm terrified of people with knives and stuff and guns. Yeah. I ain't no Jackie Chan. I ain't going near any of that stuff. Run,
right? No, yeah. I get it. But like, I think that is a very good point, because when men, I can't speak for women, but when men are talking to each other in a confrontational way, there's always an undertone of physical violence. You know what I mean? There's always like, I'm not saying that, you know, men can't disagree without having to, you know, fight, but you never know, particularly if it's a stranger, what that other person's intentions are. And, you know, if you're a person just living in a fucking whatever, you live in your life, chances are that eventually you're going to have a very confrontational interaction with another person that you don't know, another stranger, like the one that you described, or maybe even more heated. I've had heaps of really, really heated, you know, arguments with random people that I don't know, just, you know, like road rage and fucking.
Are these the people who walk into your shot when you're recording in a public space? You know, those privileged like influencers.
When they walk across my camera. Yeah, I'm like, fucking throw down straight away.
And then the influencers like make a big scene as if the person walking in a public space is the person in the wrong. And it's like,
yeah, they're fuckwits. Oh, I saw
the subreddit, like, I'm the main character.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's that.
Kieran's like, I get into heaps of aggressive arguments. Like,
get the fuck out of it. Can't you see I'm recording it? No. I saw one. This guy was recording like his deadlift on a platform, and this random dude at this gym walks up to him and just slaps him in the head. And has a go at him for hogging the platform for too long.
What?
Yeah, he was like, bro, you've been here for fucking X amount. Like, you're wasting time. You're on your phone. All this just like randomly abusing him. Only in America, right? The guy that hit him ended up getting banned from the gym or whatever. But I don't know how I'd react. I'd probably react a similar way. I want to I want to say that if someone did that to me, I'd fucking double leg takedown, choke. But yeah, I'm not going to do that. You know, if someone hits me or whatever, unless they're still coming at me, because he just hit him and then just stood up, I'd be pissed off and I would maybe have reacted more aggressively than the guy did. But
yeah, I'd probably retaliate with a shove or just complete shock, like disbelief at what had just happened, and be like, what, like, huh?
You know. Particularly if, you know, they're not like, you know, they're not like a threat in a way. If they're similar size to you, but they look, you know, well, you never know what anyone else is like, what anyone else's skill set is, but that's the beauty of jiu-jitsu. It makes you, I don't know, more confident in yours. Because what are the odds? Like, let me put it like this. And I know we spoke about this before, but say I'm in that situation. Some dude hits me for using a deadlifting platform for too long. And then it does like, you know, and I'm assessing, you know, whether or not I can take him. And then we do end up in an altercation and it goes to grappling. And clearly he's a fucking grappler as well. What do you think would happen in that situation?
Yeah.
You know, if he like puts me in Della Heva or something, I'm like, oh, hang on a minute. Puts me in like X-Guard and I'm like, fucking, I don't know.
That specific situation though is definitely where striking has the edge. Like you see some videos of, you know, dash cam footage or whatever, and striker's ability to be able to read and see coming a punch that is like seemingly out of nowhere. Like obviously it's not out of nowhere as in punch from behind, but just their ability to read someone's like hips moving and shoulders moving and to duck a punch like that. And whereas like jiu-jitsu guys would just get like slapped across the face and be like, and then like,
I'd definitely take get hit across the face. But
I would. I'm terrible. This is people watching the video. This is me when someone throws a punch. I'm like, flinch and duck, you know, and get punched.
Yeah. I would definitely get hit. But the odds of me getting knocked out on one punch, if they're in front of me and it's not like a dog shot, I think are fairly low. I mean, I wouldn't say they're low, particularly if they're untrained. So say that example, the guy, say he, you know, I'm deadlifting, untrained dude, comes up, slaps me, I push him, he throws a punch or whatever, and it does connect. I think of getting a clean punch that knocks me cold, I don't know. It's kind of hard to knock someone out when you're not trained. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is. And then, you know, obviously there's the horror stories of, you know, dudes just get hit once and knocked and out die. And then hit their head, you know. Mm-hmm.
But normally those cases, you don't see it coming. You're very drunk, so your body's very relaxed, and it's to the back of the head. That would fucking knock you out. They're like the dog shots, and there's heaps of dog shot, one hit, one punch deaths, you know, and then the head falls on concrete, and that's what kills you, right? Yeah. So what I'm trying to say is, everyone has a plan to get punched in the face, and, you know, there's those quotes where it's like, oh, you punch a black belt, it becomes a brown belt. You punch him again, it becomes a purple belt. I don't believe that, you know, as a one-for-one, but all I'm trying to say is in that case, if I got punched, I don't know. I think I'd still be confident in my ability to close the distance, take him down, and fuck him up, bro.
Yeah. Or maybe you shouldn't have been taking so long with your deadlifts. Who knows? You know?
Yeah, bro. I don't know. I've had a confrontation at the gym like that where I think looking back on it, the reason I think about it so much is I probably was in the wrong, but the guy still acted like a fuckwit. I took a bench press before I was using it, and I reserved the bench press, did like a warm-up set or whatever, and then spent a lot of time doing a lower body warm-up because I was doing something specific with the bench and another exercise. And this guy was like, you're not even fucking using, like, he just came up to me straight away and started to abuse me. You're not even using the fucking bench press. You're doing like squats or some shit, like doing some sort of thing. I'm like, oh, I'm warming up for leg drop, bro. He's like, fucking leg drop. And this big roided up cunt, and oh man, it was similar to the slap confrontation, but without the hitting.
Just without the slap.
He was so angry at me. And looking back on it, he's probably right. I probably should have let him use the fucking bench press, did my full warm up, and then tried to get the bench press. So he was right, but he went about it the wrong way.
Yeah, it's like people who think you can have two machines / pieces of equipment at once as well. Like if you're choosing to go to the gym and be more efficient with your time and superset shit, that's fine, but you don't get to have like the bench press and the squat rack at the same time. Like, you know, like I mean, you can do it. In my opinion, you can do it.
Who's gonna stop me, Adam? Who's gonna fucking stop me, bro?
That dude who slaps you. you can do it.
Come try it, bro. Come try it. Fuck you.
maybe a bit harder with free weights because you got to like unrack them and rack them. But let's just say it's two machines where it's cable machines where it's very easy to change the weights. For argument's sake, if you're supersetting, like in my opinion, you by default have to let people work in with you.
Oh yeah, you can let them work in. I no one wants to work in though. No one.
No, I mean, no I, one I, wants to work in. Yeah, but I do. I always ask. Like I couldn't.
I have before, but not often. But anyone can work in. But I'm not giving you my machine. Like my machine. I'm not giving up my reservation because I'm.
Well, then how many machines? How many machines can you have before it's like, well, now you're being selfish.
That's where gym etiquette comes into play. Depends on the size of the gym. If it's a very large gym with not many people, I can reserve up to 3 machines, I'd say. Any more than that's a, you know, taking a piss. But this, it's the same when there's this type of gym goer that we call weight collector, or that like the
hunter
gatherer, where they just have like a huge amount of weights around them and they just haven't put shit back. I don't like that because you're not actually utilizing that. But if I'm utilizing a cable machine and a bench press for a superset and you walk up and go, oh, but you have two, so I get to take the cable, you can go fuck yourself. You can work in, but I'm not giving up the cable just because I'm also doing bench press. If I'm working at an actual proper superset, you can fuck off.
Like, but I think you could share. You can share.
Yeah, of course we can share, but you're not going to want to share. Like, you have to, and the correct etiquette to share is if you change, like, say you're using the
cable. You change the way you change your back.
Exactly. You change your back. Yeah. So you change it down to your girly weights and then you put it back to my, you know, normal man weights. My wife just rolls her eyes at me. I don't like when she's in the room when we record because I get all of her color commentary in the form of body language and eye rolls and shit. I hate it.
She's savage. She's savage.
Yeah. Poisoning me.
Anyway, so the main why that I asked myself recently that got me down this train of thought is, you know, like I've got this friend, I'm not going to mention their name, but anything that you do that perhaps doesn't, like, he'll very aggressively ask you why about something. And if it doesn't serve this very specific purpose, it's a waste of time. Let's say, for argument's sake, if it doesn't make you better at jiu-jitsu, let's say, because that's my career and that's what I do, you know, like, why are you doing this if it's detrimental to your jiu-jitsu? Or like, why are you wasting your time doing this if it doesn't make your jiu-jitsu better?
Okay, so, to make you happy though.
Oh, well, yeah, no, maybe, but not particularly. But anyway,
I agree with it.
One of my most hated forms of exercise is running. I absolutely hate running. Mm. A, I just hate it. And B, I find it pretty punishing on my ankles. And as I'm older and have had multiple knee surgeries, pretty punishing on my knees. What do I look like? I'm going to go do soft sand running? Fuck no. I already hate running enough as it is. Like, so I don't like running. I don't enjoy it. I'm not fast at it. You know, which is funny because when I was a kid, I was like doing little athletics as a kid. I was quick.
Yeah.
But I don't like running, sprinting, jogging, any of that.
Moving.
But yeah, moving, getting out of bed. but recently, probably now for the last, maybe almost 2 months now, be close to 2 months, I've been running only once, maybe twice a week. There were some weeks I did it 3 times a week, and I found by sort of halfway through the second run, one of my knees would really start to get quite painful. Mm. And at the moment, I found sort of once a week, I don't have any knee issues. Twice a week, you know, let's say for argument's sake, every fortnight, if I went twice a week, you know, I should be okay. But you know, after that, my knee starts getting hurt.
Yeah,
it's nothing I do. I don't like track the kilometers. I don't track the only thing I track is the time. And what I mean by that is I just try to make it a 20 minute run. You know, if it's 22 minutes, 25 minutes, I don't care. If in that 20 minutes I only did 2 Ks, I don't care. Right. I'm not concerned about the distance or the speed. I run very slow. Right. It's like, you could have like 80-year-old power walkers go past me, but with whatever. Yeah, with the sticks, just cruise past me. And I don't really know why I started, to be honest. I think I do know, actually, sorry. The first day I ran was when I got back from my recent-ish holiday overseas to the US. And I got back and, you know, was kind of just trying to break the jet lag. I landed, and where I live now is nowhere near the gym, right? Like, it's really far away. Plus, I didn't have a license at the time, so I wasn't going to commute all that way. And, I just got off the plane, jet lagged, and I thought, I just need to move after being on a plane for 20 hours. I'll just go for a run around the block. That was when the first run happened. And, yeah, but when I actually started asking why, like all the reasons to run, the typical ones, if you listed them, they would all be negatives for me for a reason to run. So if you said like, oh, whatever they are, let's say if you go, oh, running's a good way for you to, you know, to switch off. Nah, I hate it. Oh, running's a good way to think about stuff. Nah, I hate it. Oh, go for a run. It's a good chance to listen to a podcast. Nah. Oh, go for a run. It's a good way to
look. Podcasts.
Yeah. Go for a run. It's a good way to get fit, lose weight, whatever. Nah, not interested. I'll do any other form of exercise.
Okay.
But then the why that I got to that made me go like, yeah, that's why I'm doing it, and make me not necessarily enjoy it, so to speak, is that I realized that running is just such a basic, fundamental human skill.
Yes.
Like you learn to crawl, walk, run.
Yes.
And if we rewound 2 months ago to that, to the run I did after I got off the plane, I probably ran, maybe 15, 20 minutes. I think it was 15 minutes or 16 minutes from memory. Mm. I don't know the distance. Let's call it maybe 2Ks. Cause I know when I was young, when I was late teens, early 20s, I could do like 4Ks in 20 minutes. It was like the best I ever got to. Not that it was something I was trying to get good at, but I could jump on a treadmill at the gym and do, you know, I could do 3 or 4 Ks at that sort of a K every 5 minutes, which I know, I don't know. I think that's a okay pace for someone who's not a runner, but whatever.
For someone who's not a runner, it's fine.
Yeah. So I just realized if we went back 2 months, man, I did that 15 minute jog or whatever, it was maybe 2Ks. I had sore quads for a week. I felt heavy and lethargic and I was thumping around. And anyway, fast forward to today, I don't particularly enjoy, no, I don't enjoy the run at all. I hate it, but I enjoy knowing that I have acquired / maintaining a very basic human skill.
Yeah.
And then that started, that started snowballing where I thought, actually, it's actually rather embarrassing if you were to sit and say, like, I can't run 3 or 4 Ks.
It is, right? Yeah.
Like, yeah. I actually think, you know, I don't want to, like, throw that out to all the public. But for me, as someone who's supposed to be, I don't consider myself an athlete, but for lack of a better word.
You are. You're a professional.
You know, it's embarrassing to think that I can't run 3, 4, 5 Ks.
Yes.
And, okay, I do it very cruisy at a slow jog. But now, like,
you
I went
can
for
do it.
I went for a run on Monday. Again, I don't know the distance, but it was a 25-minute jog, mm-hmm. right? Because it's not on a treadmill; it's out on the road. I don't know how far it was, but all I do is like I set the stopwatch on my phone, walk out the door, have a vague idea of the loop that I will do, and guesstimate that it'll be 20 minutes. Come back. Sometimes it's 19 minutes. Sometimes it's 22. This one was 25. So, you know, and for me as someone who's always hated running, except for when I was a kid and you run because it's play. I've always hated running. Now I'm actually kind of okay with it. And
that's awesome.
You know, I do it once a week. And yeah, if that also helps me be a bit fitter, have better VO2, does that make my cardio a bit better for jiu-jitsu? Probably not. But even if it makes it better by 0.5%, I'm not doing it for those reasons. Mm-hmm. And I've had this friend of mine before tell me that like running's the only thing running makes you better at is running. It's a waste of time in terms of improving your jiu-jitsu, blah, 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 blah. And
idiot.
I'm like, yeah. And
I think I know who that friend is, and that's just so wrong. That's why I hate, sorry to derail you, but I just have to say this. That's why I hate blanket statements from people like that. That say things like running, the only thing running will make you better at is running. Running will never help your jiu-jitsu. Show me the evidence to support that. You're just fucking wrong. You're just fucking wrong. Yeah. One of the best ways to improve your VO2 max has been shown to be sprint intervals running. Running.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes, there's a principle known as the said principle, which is specific adaptations to imposed demands. The more you run, the better, the more efficient you're going to get at running. But to say that there is no translation from running to jiu-jitsu in terms of your improvement on VO2 max is so wrong. It's just one of those things I can just say and make shit up. It's just making shit up. Show me the evidence. Yeah, show me your study to show that is the case. Show me the study to show that VO2 max is irrelevant for jiu-jitsu. First of all, you can't. They've actually shown the opposite in research, that VO2 max is incredibly relevant to jiu-jitsu. And then show me the study that running does not improve your VO2 max. You cannot do that. It's just so dumb.
Well, yeah, I actually think as well, I think it has improved my cardio.
Of course it has.
Training.
Of course it has.
No, I mean, not a huge amount, but I definitely...
No, because you're not doing a huge amount of running. Like,
that's right. Yeah.
But what you're doing is amazing. Don't get me wrong. I'm not putting you down. Man, I love what you're doing.
Like for me, if you, like I said, you list off any of the other reasons for a reason why you should or could run, and I'm not interested, yet somehow I organically, it wasn't like I was looking for a reason to run. This all just happened organically. And then the same way it happened organically, I organically started thinking about the importance of asking why, because me answering that question, why am I going for a run, has actually made me be, not enjoy the run, but enjoy the fact that I can now run again as slow as a fucking, New York marathon would take me 12 hours. But, the fact that I can now go for a 3-5K run, a 20-minute, 25-minute run, I think it's just, for the time being, I've been doing it for 2 months, and I hope to keep doing it just as a, you need to maintain, this is a skill that you lose if you never run.
Yeah.
Similarly to that.
That's so awesome.
I know I've been, and then just I'll tack on to the end of that I then also added that with swimming as well. Not as much a basic human skill, because running, you don't, in little air quotes, need to be taught, right? Like a fucking toddler runs, but you need to learn how to swim. There's plenty of adults in the world who don't know how to swim, but I think if you grow up on any of the coastal areas of Australia, that's a pretty basic human skill to be able to swim.
Yeah.
And so I've started doing that as well. And similarly to how I, my time in the pool is much less, because this started actually because I take my son to swimming lessons, and while he's doing his swimming lesson, I get access to the pool. So I was like, oh, I'll do some laps while he's in the lesson. And because it's only during his lesson, I've got a little less time. So I pretty much only do a 15-minute swim to make sure I have time to get out and be ready for his lesson to finish. But yeah, the same way I was trying to think it's embarrassing not to be able to run 5Ks, I thought it's a bit embarrassing if I can't swim 1K.
Yeah.
I can't quite do in 15 minutes, because again, I'm very slow, but I can do it, right? Like, what did I do yesterday? I did 1200 meters, but at the same time, there was a dude in the lane next to me, man, just looks like your regular middle-aged nobody. He was so fast, bro. He was so fast. Like even when I was doing, okay, it's the last 50 meters, I'm going to sprint it, he's just cruising past me. Like when I get to the ends, I'm not doing the little somersault to push off, right? Because that takes more energy and breath, right? But it's faster, hence why professional swimmers do it. He's just cruising, somersault at one end, cruising, somersault the other end, cruise like just nonstop. And he's so much faster than me sprinting. I was like, holy crap, bro. But I'm not doing it for that. Like, and then from the running, I tacked that on as well. The swimming started from having free access to a pool, but then I quite easily put that under the same umbrella of, it's a fucking basic human skill, man. Like, will I continue to do laps in the pool in the middle of winter? Probably not. But at the moment, I'm enjoying these skills that I had when I was younger, but haven't done for decades, to now sort of have them. And I don't know, maybe the swimming is also helping my cardio in jiu-jitsu. I don't know. Pretty restricted breathing. 100% mouth breathing, though, that's for sure.
No, that's normal. You don't want to be breathing through your nose when you're swimming. It's dangerous. But it's called hypoxia training. It's legitimately a form of training that some people do, and swimming is an excellent way to improve your hypoxia training, and it's actually really good for asthmatics for that reason.
Yeah, right. So yeah,
that's why I was a swimmer when I was younger. I did swim squad. I competed at a state level.
Because you had asthma when you were younger, or still?
Yeah,
do.
Still have it. Yeah. It went away when I joined the Navy. Ironically, it went away for like. Well, I thought it was gone. I thought I'd like. You know how they say, "Oh, you grow out of it." Childhood asthma. Yeah. Oh, people grow out of it. I didn't fucking grow out of it, man. I still have asthma attacks like to this day, but it came back with a vengeance. So I just had a period where it was like really good, and I wasn't using my inhaler or whatever. Living life on the edge. But yeah, I still have asthma. That's why I failed my dive medical. Well, part of the reason why I failed my dive medical.
So obviously we could talk for ages and ages and ages. We're going to keep this a bit of a shorter episode due to some time restrictions that are going on behind the scenes. But my question for anyone listening is, well, first I want you to do something. If people have any interesting whys to send through, as in why you started jiu-jitsu, I'd be interested to hear it. Some are more interesting than others, but...
Well, we want to hear it anyway.
Yeah.
Even if yours is boring.
But as well, if anyone has any sort of, epiphany moments like I did with running and swimming where I don't want to get too emotional about it, but if there's any something in your life that you're maybe not sure why you do it, if you really ask yourself and answer that question, you might find that you'll... be more on board with it, or you might find you actually stop this bad habit that you've got if you really actually answer the why.
Yeah. This is not like a counseling thing, man.
No. Yeah. That's right. I feel like this is a podcast that would be like, and here's our guest, Andrew Huberman or whatever, and he could go into it way more. But
I like what you're saying, and I've had something similar recently, but in a different realm. And I'd like your sort of thought on this. So not to get all like counsely, but that's for young men that don't grow up with like a father figure in the home, you lack certain skills unless you go seek them out yourself. And what I mean by that is simple things that are more traditional, traditionally what a man would do, like basic maintenance on a car or like basic handyman work. I know I'm talking in stereotypes here, but my dad was very, very handy with a car. He was practically a fucking mechanic without being a mechanic. He was a handyman. He could do anything. Like, so anytime my sisters needed something, they'd call him and he would like, come around and fix it or whatever. And that's what I saw. But I didn't grow up with that. So I missed out on those skills. So it was recently I had to change the fucking light bulb of my car headlamps, right? The light bulbs had blown, so I didn't have any lights. So it was as simple as changing a light bulb. But unless you've done it before in this particular car, I had a hard time with it. It took me over an hour, right? And halfway
it's not that simple. It depends on the model of car.
Now that I've done it once, I could say that, it's not super easy, but now that I've done it, it's kind of easy. But it's like with anything, once you've done it once, right? Anyway, so I got to about the 20-minute mark and I was looking on YouTube videos and I was like trying to fucking change this light bulb, and it was really, I wasn't getting it. I thought that I needed like a mechanic or whatever, because I thought I misunderstood, I thought I had to take the whole fucking, whole casing of the light out and bolts and blah, blah, blah. Anyway. The point is, I didn't give up because I was like, no, fuck this. I was stubborn. And I was like, no, fuck this. I should be able to figure this out. And I was mad at myself for not being able to figure it out. I didn't want to call my wife's brother to come and do it for me. You know what I mean? I didn't want to. I was sick of being that dude. So I think I was out there for longer than an hour. And it was like snowing. My hands were cold and shit. But I fucking figured it out is the point. And that goes back to what I'm sort of saying about, life basic skills that I feel like I should have. It's coming from me. I'm not saying that, I should have these skills, but I feel like I should have them. So I'm kind of sick of not having these basic skills that I feel I should have, if that makes sense.
With cars, I wouldn't think that changing a headlamp is like the basic one. But I mean, if someone says to me that they don't know how to, in American terminology, pump gas, that's embarrassing.
What the fuck? Yeah, that's weird.
If you don't know how to change a tire on a car, like that's embarrassing. Well, if you don't know how to open the bonnet and put more water in for the windshield wipers, that's fucking embarrassing.
My friend is Italian and he was telling me his mother has never pumped gas in her life. She drives, but she's never pumped gas because in Italy, they have someone, they pay someone to do that.
Yeah, so they never pump that. Culturally as well, it's quite, that's quite similar in Brazil as well.
Yeah.
But lastly, the basic human skill that I have zero patience for anyone saying, like, this is more basic than like the ability to run, right? People who say that they can't cook is embarrassing for me, man. Like, you don't have to be a cook or a chef, but if you can't, like, I literally know people that wouldn't be able to go 7 days of a week without like ordering or going and buying a pre-made something. Like I'm not saying like I'm a great cook, but could I go a whole week where, you know, all I have is ingredients and I make all my food at home? Yeah. Yes. You know, like, yeah. And if you can't do that, I think that's, man, feeding yourself is, it's like literally one of the things you can't live. It's literally one of the things that will kill you. You can't live without, you know?
Like, yeah. And you figure it out. Like, when I finally moved off base, because when I was in the Navy, we lived on base, all your food was, you know, get it from the mess, right? But when I finally moved off base, I was bodybuilding, so I was like meal prepping and everything. You get good quick when you start cooking and you have to eat your food that tastes like shit. You know, it helps you along the journey of fucking being like, no, I need to learn how to cook, because otherwise your food just always tastes shit.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to be great at it, but if you can't,
yeah,
if you can't feed, if you can't feed yourself, that's bad.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Yeah. Guys, we're actually going to leave it there today because, like I said, we do have some time restrictions going on behind the scenes.
Mm.
You look like you're about to say something or no?
No, I'd just say I did have a quick something interesting.
Okay, I've got a very quick one as well. So you go first.
My something interesting is actually something depressing. I've and it's not super interesting maybe for listeners, but I don't know. This is what I had planned to talk about is it's finally happened, Adam. I've finally blown out my knees.
Oh yes, yes, yes.
So recently I was performing a Choi Bar entry. If you don't know what a Choi Bar is, go back and listen to the Choi Bar episode. I was performing a Choi Bar entry on with one of my training partners, and it's not like he did anything wrong. I didn't do anything wrong. I just, in that windshield wiper movement, I heard a very loud pop in my left knee, and it wasn't painful instantly, but I felt something wrong. It was a very loud pop, and felt it, heard it. And I even asked him after, I was like, did you hear my knee pop? Like, and he's like, nah, man. Anyway, so it turns out I saw the physio yesterday, whatever. And I have at least a grade two tear on my LCL. So I was right. I was like, oh, that's definitely LCL. I was right. It was LCL. And so we're not sure if I need surgery yet because there wasn't an MRI. So I need to try and get an MRI. But in order to get an MRI, I need to be taken on by the orthopedic specialists in like a city north of where I am. So, you know, that's a gift and the curse of socialism is it's free, but I need to get into the system. So long story short, I don't know if it's worse than a grade two tear on the LCL. So
long story short, you got more work to do now to come back to Australia and beat me up.
Oh, mate, way more work.
You're just gonna have to be on the ski machine, like getting your
on ski. Yeah, man, they love skiing. But I wanted to ski this season, and I can't fucking ski now because if I have a LCL tear, there's no way I can do that action. Anyway, but I think I did the calculations. If it is just a grade two and no surgery required, which I hope that it is, then the soonest I'll be back on the mats training properly from now is fucking mid-January, bro. Mid-January. What the fuck?
Yeah, this sucks. Man, even with a grade two, I would be very skeptical that you would need surgery. I really
won't. No. If it's a grade two, I won't. But if it's worse than a grade two, which the guy just has no idea.
I'd be hard pressed to think it's worse.
But we'll see. But the movement, the amount of movement that's the only reason that we're super concerned is
how much give.
Oh, heaps of give. We did the stability test. And I ran myself through a similar test and I noticed the same, but obviously when the professional is doing it, he was like, oh fuck, you know, cause he got me to do a pistol squat. I was doing balanced things. I had zero pain, no swelling, which is very common for ligament damage, by the way. And I could do everything that he needed me to do because of, you know, all the training I've done, I was compensating, right? And like compensating very well. And he's like, oh, it looks great. And then he got me on the table and he was comparing my left and right, the amount of lateral give. And my God, it just moves so much.
Yeah, right.
You know, like what, you know, those videos you see where the knees are moving in ways they shouldn't. That was my knee. And I was like, oh shit. It was real bad.
Well, wait and see, eh? Yeah. Well, my something interesting is a little less depressing, but very quick. So on December 2nd, we have another Subversion event. Subversion is a local Australian / Sydney event like Who's Number One. It's just all single fight matchups. And we have an Australian guy, Josh Coulibal, who's actually fighting on it. So he's not known for his jiu-jitsu. He doesn't even... last I know, train at a proper jiu-jitsu gym. But the reason I mention it is because Josh is one of the Australians who's made it into the UFC. He's had 6 fights in the UFC. Haven't gone great for him. 3 wins, 2 losses, and 1 draw. I mean, his overall professional MMA record is 11 wins, 2 losses, 1 draw. But yeah, he's a featherweight, so that's Volkanovski's division. Okay. But yeah, he's a local Sydney guy who trains in Bondi Junction in Sydney out of Igor MMA.
Okay.
A super lovely dude. And yeah, he's on the upcoming Subversion card. So I just thought it's, it was noteworthy to mention there's a current UFC fighter who's fighting on the Subversion card. Yeah. Josh is known as a striker. He's not a jiu-jitsu guy. But yeah, he'll be on the upcoming Subversion against, a Subversion veteran, if you will, who's got some pretty sick, like, big takedowns and stuff. What's his name? Chris Casaselli. He's from a Gracie gym.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're fighting on December 2nd. So.
Hell yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
There you go.
Anyway. All right. That's it, guys. We're going to wrap it up super fast. Real tidy outro because people have got places to be. But honestly, if there's any things that you're not sure why you do it, I don't want to get too philosophical, but kind of ask yourself why. Also, send us through any why you started training jiu-jitsu. We'd be keen to hear. Okay, guys. But until next time, thank you very much for listening.